turn to Isaiah chapter 35. Isaiah chapter 35. Isaiah, of course, began his ministry near the end of Uzziah's reign over the southern kingdom of Judah. And he continued his ministry through the reigns of Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah. It was during Jotham's reign that Assyria emerged as an international power, conquering the nations surrounding the northern kingdom of Israel, and also bringing the northern kingdom of Israel into Assyrian captivity. While all this was going on, the southern kingdom of Judah certainly was under the threat of Assyria. And it was during this time that Isaiah preached to them, and he warns them that judgment is coming upon them due to their own sin, due to the fact that they were guilty of the same sins of the northern kingdom. But Isaiah warned them, though he warned them of coming judgment, he told them that the immediate threat was not Assyria, even though they thought it was, but that they would instead go into Babylonian captivity. And Isaiah, of course, spoke of this. But he also foretold that in time, God would deliver them from the Babylonian captivity. But as we all know, the book of Isaiah, the message of Isaiah, goes beyond what Isaiah was dealing with at that time. It goes beyond Babylonian captivity. It goes to even a greater captivity in sin and death and judgment and hell. And Isaiah's message goes beyond, his message of deliverance goes beyond a mere deliverance from Babylon. It goes to a greater deliverance, the deliverance of a soul, the salvation of a soul. The overall theme of Isaiah corresponds to his name, which simply means Jehovah is salvation. That's pretty much the overall theme of the book of Isaiah. But Isaiah knew that the kings and the prophets and the priests of the nation, that they had all failed. And he was moved by the Holy Spirit 700 years ahead in time to preach concerning the coming of a man who would not fail, the great King of Kings, the perfect prophet, the perfect priest, Jesus, the Son of God. And what we see throughout the book of Isaiah is that mankind is miserable, with no hope, with no help, with no answer or remedy. But coming into view, in the midst of all that, in the book of Isaiah, is this one, Jesus Christ, who of course is the only hope, who of course is the only answer and remedy, and is the one who can change the heart of man and deliver the soul of the miserable, and can remedy the sin of a depraved heart. So we want to look at Isaiah chapter 35. Begin reading with verse 1. We'll read the entire chapter. The wilderness and the solitary place shall be glad for them, and the desert shall rejoice and blossom as the rose. It shall blossom abundantly and rejoice, even with joy and singing. The glory of Lebanon shall be given unto it. The excellency of Carmel and Sharon, they shall see the glory of the Lord and the excellency of our God. Strengthen ye the weak hands, and confirm the feeble knees. Say to them that are of a fearful heart, be strong, fear not. Behold, your God will come with vengeance. Even God with a recompense, he will come and save you. Then the eyes of the blind shall be opened, and the ears of the deaf shall be unstopped. Then shall the lame man leap as a hart, and the tongue of the dumb sing. For in the wilderness shall waters break out, and streams in the desert. And the parched ground shall become a pool, and the thirsty land springs of water. In the habitation of dragons, where each lay, shall be grass with reeds and rushes. And a highway shall be there, and a way, and it shall be called the way of holiness. The unclean shall not pass over it, but it shall be for those the wayfaring men, though fools shall not err therein. No lion shall be there, nor any ravenous beast shall go up thereon. It shall not be found there, but the redeemed shall walk there. And the ransomed of the Lord shall return and come to Zion with songs and everlasting joy upon their heads. They shall obtain joy and gladness, and sorrow and sighing shall flee away. In chapter 34, the previous chapter, the subject is God's judgment. The subject is the defeat of Israel's enemies. And there's a message in chapter 34 for you and I, and that is, don't fret over your enemies. God is greater, and their time is limited. That's the lesson for you and I from chapter 34. In chapter 35, the subject is God delivering, God restoring his people. Again, the immediate reference is to the Babylonian captivity. As you read chapter 35, there's a calm in that chapter. There's a miraculous transformation that takes place. It's a message of hope. It's a message of expectation. Now, some view Isaiah 35 as a prophecy of the restoration of Judah from Babylonian captivity, and I believe that such is true. Some view it as the coming of Christ in the incarnation and his saving power, and I believe in type that that is true also. Some view the text as a prophecy of the millennial reign of Jesus Christ. And that is most certainly true. What we read here is not a type of the millennial reign of Christ, but the actual events of the millennial reign. So without a doubt, this chapter is a millennial promise. So immediately the question is probably being asked in people's mind, well, what does that have to do with us now? Well, whatever is prophetic in the Word of God is also the teaching of biblical truth for you and I today. In other words, there is spiritual application for us today. We want to center our main thought upon the promise of verse 3. Behold, your God will come. And it's referring to Jesus. He will come and save you. So he's referring to Christ. And when Christ comes, and this is in view of the millennial reign, when Christ shows up, miraculous and unheard of things will happen. And though the passage is a millennial promise, and though it will have its perfect fulfillment during the millennial reign of Jesus Christ, we want today to look at it as a type of revival amongst God's people. It is a picture of the beauty of revival. And as such, it is a message of hope. It is a message of cheer for you and I today. I'm going to speak this morning on abundant life awakened. Abundant life awakened. And we want to consider three main points. First of all, we want to consider the audience that Isaiah is preaching to. Secondly, we want to look at the message of Isaiah here in this chapter. And then thirdly, we want to see the power of Christ to do the miraculous. But first of all, consider the audience that Isaiah is preaching to. He's speaking to the people of Judah. They have turned their backs upon the God who saved their souls. And as a result, they are facing the terrible chastisement of the Lord. It's on the horizon. He first of all speaks of their circumstances. In verse 1, he speaks of the wilderness, the solitary place, and the desert. These words are descriptive of what Judah had become due to their sins. These words describe their hearts. These words describe their lives. And they, of course, are descriptive of the hearts and lives of many of God's people today. They are also, those words are also descriptive of the overall depravity of mankind. These words in verse 1 are also descriptive of the situation in which you and I are called to serve God today. So notice there in verse 1, Judah had become a wilderness. That is, an uncivilized place. It is a place that can be inhumane. It is a very cruel place. It is an aimless place without direction. It is a bewildering place, a place of restlessness. It is a place, it is a very unsettled place, a place of discomfort, a place of great danger, consisting, of course, of many pitfalls where we can very easily become maimed and have injuries and wounds. But notice also they have become a solitary place. A place of isolation, conveying the idea that you're on your own. You're on your own. And one of the worst punishments that God can give is to leave you to yourself. And they were on their own. In other words, a solitary place. They're in the middle of nowhere. They have nowhere to turn. Place of isolation. Notice also it's a desert. This, of course, is a wasteland. It's a barren land. It's a very stark land. It's infertile. It's unfruitful. It's empty. It's dehydrated, if you will. It's a very bleak place. It conveys the idea of the monotony of the pathless sand of the desert. But then down in verse 7, notice what else they had become. Parched ground. This is that which is scorched and withered, shriveled up. Also we read of a thirsty land, a land that is hard, a land that is suffering greatly. But then notice also at the end of verse 7 that it was the habitation of dragons. Speaking of that which is poison and cruel and harmful and destructive. So all of this, the wilderness, the solitary place, the desert, the parched ground, the thirsty land, and the habitation of dragons. It all speaks of a situation. It all speaks of a condition of trouble. A condition of distress and difficulty. A condition of hardship and misery and suffering and anguish and grief and sorrow and pain and affliction. And it's all due to their sin. It's all due to their sin. So we see what she has become. We see also he speaks of their spiritual disabilities. He mentions these in verses 3 and 4. He mentions hands, speaking of the instrument by which we work. He speaks of the knees. He speaks of the heart. And if you notice, there are disabilities in each one of these. The hands are weak. That is, they are frail. They are debilitated. They are decrepit. They have become defective. And they are deficient. Conveying the idea that they are unable to work. They are unable to fight. And they can hardly be lifted up in praise. The knees are feeble. That is, they're unsteady. Perhaps spasmodic, conveying the idea spiritually that they are unlikely and unable to pray. And that is the description of these people. It's the description of many today. And if the hands are weak, it is because the knees are feeble, spiritually speaking. Notice also that the heart is fearful. That is, their heart panics. Their heart is greatly alarmed. It's very apprehensive. It's filled with anxiety. Notice in verse 5, you have the blind and the deaf. This has to do with defects in perception, incapacities concerning the powers of knowledge. They are blind and they are deaf. In verse 6, notice the lame. Lameness, of course, refers to the powers of motion and activity, conveying the idea that, spiritually speaking, that they have a disability. They're unable to walk. They're unable to run the race. But then notice they're also dumb. What that means is they're mute. It's an inability in speech, an incapacity of utterance. So you put all of it together, the wilderness, the solitary place, the desert, the parched ground, the thirsty land, the habitation of dragons, the weak hands, the feeble knees, the fearful heart, the blind, the deaf, the lame, and the dumb. And all of this is spiritual in nature. And it's all the result of their sin and their pursuit of vanity. What we have here is truly a very grim, a very dreadful, a very miserable picture of a people. This is a picture of an extremely needful and urgent situation. It is a picture of a spiritually worn down people. And I believe that's where we are today. Just look around. People are worn down. They're worn out. Spiritually overwhelmed people. It brings us to our second point. To these people, there was a message from Isaiah. And so it is today. Isaiah preaching a message of hope to this audience declares in verses 1 and 2 that there is a gladness. Just because you don't have it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. There is a gladness. There is a rejoicing. There is a fruitfulness and a beauty to be had. We see that in verses 1 and 2. In verse 3, we see that there is a strengthening available. And that there is a steadiness to be had. Confirm the feeble knees. Strengthen the weak hands. And in verse 4, there is a calmness of spirit to be had. And there is a deliverance. God will come and save you, deliver you. And in verses 5 and 6, there is an ability beyond one's own ability to be had. And in verses 6 and 7, there is an abundance to be had. And in verses 8 and 9, there is a safe place to walk. It's available. And in verse 10, there is a return available. And there is a way to Zion made available. And we see that there are songs and joy and gladness to be had. And be sure of this today. No matter where you are, no matter what your spiritual condition, there is a spiritual gladness. There is a rejoicing, a fruitfulness, a beauty, a strengthening, a steadiness, a calmness, an ability beyond our own ability. There is an abundance. There is a safe place to walk. And there is a place called Zion. And there are songs and joy. God's people may not possess them, but all of those things are real. And all of those things are available. And at this moment, Judah did not possess these things. We've already seen what they became. And the reason was their own sin was a pursuit of vanity. So Isaiah draws a picture of their condition. He tells them what is available. And then he directs their attention to where these glorious possibilities come from. Verse 3, he says, "Behold your God." I'm sorry, verse 4. "Behold your God." That's where our attention needs to be. And then he gives a promise. "Behold, your God will come." Again, he's speaking prophetically that during their Babylonian captivity, God would come and God would deliver them. More importantly, he's speaking of when Christ comes to this earth to set up his millennial kingdom. But there's application for you and I. We may find ourselves in this spiritual condition, this horrible place spiritually. And there are songs to be had, and there is rejoicing, and there is gladness, and all the things that we have mentioned. But where is it going to come from? "Behold your God, and he will come and save you." That is, he will come into your situation. "Behold your God." And there he's referring to the person of Christ. "He will come and save you." These are wonderful words. They are wonderful because of who he is. He is the one and only Savior. The one and only true deliverer from sin. The one and only way to God. The one and only door into the blessings of God. The one and only mediator between God and man. He is the one who is above everything in your life, superior to all, has precedence over all, is beyond all, and the promise is He will come. He will come. Those are amazing and wonderful words. Not only because of who He is, but because of what there is in Him. In Him is forgiveness. In Him is righteousness. In Him is acceptance and redemption and reconciliation and fellowship with God. In Him is hope and victory. Oh, we need to hear those words. Behold, your God. He will come. May I say that's your only hope. That God will come into your situation. There wasn't anything Judah could do to fix the situation. There wasn't anything they could do to undo the wilderness and the solitary place and the desert place. Their hope is this: behold your God. He will come. And He will save you. If you're here and lost today, that's your only hope. If you're here today and in a spiritual condition similar to what Judah was in here, this is your only hope. Behold your God. Behold your God. He has everything that you need. No matter how dire the condition, no matter how desperate the situation, He is who and what we need. That never, ever, ever changes. Never. Isaiah is directing their attention to the person of Christ. He's directing their attention to the promises of Jesus Christ. And you and I live in a world, live in a time where many have fallen into the condition that is described here. And therefore it is a time of great trial and tribulations for many. It is a time full of difficulties, full of obstacles. Most people, by the way, create their own obstacles by their own sins. It's a time that's full of ditches. And many have fallen into them and have been in those ditches for a long time. It's a time of temptations and enemies. We live in a time, of course, that is sinful. We live in a time that's wicked, it's twisted, it's corrupt, it's defiled, it's vile, it's depraved. But there's hope. There is hope. And the hope is this: behold your God. There's not only hope. If you've become a wilderness and a solitary place and a desert, and you've become blind and lame, if you've become all of these things, there is a better place. You don't have to stay there. And that's what Isaiah is saying here in verses 1 and 2. Yes, you've become a wilderness, a solitary place and a desert, but there is a gladness, there is a rejoicing, there is a blossoming. You don't have to stay in the wilderness and in the solitary place in the desert. You don't have to remain blind and lame. The hands don't have to remain weak, and the knees don't have to remain feeble, and the heart doesn't have to remain fearful. You don't have to stay there. There is a better place. But it's all because of this one. Behold your God. He will come and save you. In verses 3 and 4, there is a command for the exhausted to be encouraged. Strengthen ye the weak hands and confirm, that is steady, the feeble knees. And there's a command for the anxious to be calmed. He's saying, just calm down. Just calm down. Behold your God. That's the message of Isaiah. Which brings us to our third point. Again, behold your God. He will come and save you. We want to see the power of Christ to do the miraculous. Many of God's people have become the wilderness. They have become a solitary place. Many of God's people sit in the house of God and are very lonely. They're a solitary place. Many have become the desert. They've become the parched ground, the thirsty land. They've become the habitation of dragons. That is, their life is filled with poison and that which is destructive. And the hands are weak. And the knees are feeble. And the heart is fearful. And there is a spiritual blindness and spiritual deafness and lameness and even dumbness. What we need so desperately today is not a readjustment of strategy, not a readjustment of effort. What we need today is for Jesus to come in His power. For God to move among us. For God to intervene. For God to interrupt our lives. For God to put down whatever it is that hinders us and enslaves us. That's what we need. Behold, your God will come. That's what we so desperately need. God's people need to be brought to the place in their lives where they are tired of living restless, isolated, barren, dehydrated lives. Tired of it. Need to be tired of it. I don't want to live this way anymore. That's the place where God's people need to be brought. The place where they're tired of being shackled, tired of being sad, and tired of being afraid. And how do you know when a people is brought to that place where they become absolutely tired of their spiritual condition? It's because then they will cry out for Jesus to come to wherever it is they are. And for our wilderness, in our solitary place, in our desert, to be swallowed up. Verse 1, to be swallowed up in gladness. If you have become a wilderness, that wilderness can be swallowed up in gladness, but it's going to take the Lord. If you have become a solitary place or a desert, those places can be swallowed up with rejoicing and a bursting forth. Notice, and rejoice and blossom, burst forth as the rose. But it's all in God. This is expressed again in verse 2 with a redundancy of words. Blossom abundantly. Rejoice. Joy. Singing. This takes the Lord. Make no mistake. The Lord can cause you and I to flourish. No matter what our condition is at this present moment, God can cause us to flourish. But only He can do it. He can still fill the wilderness and the solitary place in the desert with the glory. Notice what it says there. He's talking about the wilderness and the solitary place in the desert. The glory of Lebanon shall be given unto it. Lebanon was known for its cedars all through the Old Testament. The glory, the beauty, the magnificence of Lebanon. The excellency of Carmel. Remember Mount Carmel, Elisha. It's known for its beauty. Then he mentions Sharon, which was known for its foliage, known for its beauty. The Lord can transform your situation and your condition into something beautiful, into something marvelous. And that's what he's saying here. And then you read verses 3 through 6. And you see the Lord coming into the midst of our spiritual disabilities, bringing strength to the exhausted. May I say, we all have spiritual disabilities. There isn't a one of us here that is not disabled in some way spiritually. We all have spiritual disabilities. If we had physical disabilities, we'd get concerned. If we had physical disabilities, we would do everything we could to fix it. But somehow, some way, spiritual disabilities, they don't matter. Oh, they matter more. They matter more. They matter much more. It's far more serious to become spiritually crippled than it is physically crippled. And it's far more serious to become spiritually blind than physically blind. And if you were to wake up tomorrow blind, you would be concerned. And you would call a doctor. You would get to a hospital. But people wake up every day spiritually blind and don't think a thing of it. Many have been walking that way for years, falling into all kinds of ditches because they can't even see them. It doesn't concern them in the least. So we see here the Lord can take whatever our situation and transform it into something beautiful, something magnificent. He can bring steadiness to the feeble. He can calm the fearful. He can cause the spiritually blind to see, the spiritually deaf to hear. The spiritually lame, it says, for them to leap, not just walk. But they'll leap. And for the spiritually silent, the dumb, they'll be able to sing. In verses 6 and 7, Jesus comes into the messes of our lives. And He causes waters to break out in the wilderness. God can do that. Your life may have become a wilderness, but God can cause waters to break out in the wilderness. And for streams to flow in the desert, it says. And that burning sand become a pool. And the waters to gush forth in the dryness for green pastures to appear. He says all of that there in verses 6 and 7. In verse 8, God's people need to be brought to a point where they're tired of living aimless lives. Tired of living lives of wandering. Tired of going in circles. Cry out to God for God to come to our place and set our feet and cause us to travel a highway called the way of holiness. God can do that. Again, verse 4, behold your God. Why? Because there is such a thing as the abundant life being awakened. Behold your God. Because there is such a thing as a bursting forth of God in His glory. Behold your God. For there is such a thing as God overflowing into our lives, permeating and penetrating our lives. Behold your God. Because there is such a thing as the disrupting display of God. Oh, that God would disrupt our wilderness, disrupt the solitary place, disrupt the desert, disrupt the thirsty land and the parched ground and the habitation of dragons. Behold your God, He will come. And oh, that He would, to disrupt our lives. But so many today, their lives have become a wilderness. They live in a solitary place. They live in a desert. Their lives are a habitation of dragons. But God forbid that their lives be disrupted by God. It's pitiful. Behold your God, because there is such a thing as spiritual transformation. So no matter what our situation, no matter what our condition, He can bring forth the spiritual beauty that is spoken of in our text. So it seems to me that we need to concentrate on verse 4, behold your God. He'll come. Why will He come? Because He's faithful. Behold your God will come. He will come and save you. He will come and deliver you. That means He has the ability and the power. Whatever situation you are in, however long you have been there, however settled you are in that condition, He has the power to bring you out of it. Behold your God. Again, we realize that this has its literal fulfillment in the millennium. We're fully aware of that. But oh, there are spiritual truths here for you and I that are relevant in our own lives, to each and every one of us. There isn't a person here that this is not relevant to. Oh, may we behold Him today. Plead for Him to come into our place, to come where we are, and display Himself. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in verse song.